She grows up feeling wrong, out of place, too dark, too tall, too unruly, too opinionated, too silent, too strange. She grows up with the awareness that she is merely tolerated, an irritant, useless, that she does not deserve love, and she will need to change herself substantially, crush herself down if she is to be married.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the updates, the reviews, the opinions on the internet's favorite books, the ones you keep seeing all over Book Talk. And we tell you if they're really good or not, especially if you're busy like us. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And we are tackling a book this week that just recently got turned into a movie. It's called Hamnet. And it follows the historical fiction retelling of Shakespeare's family, except it tells it from more of the perspective of his wife and the experience about grief, family, society, and like being married to kind of like a historical genius, and the loneliness that that comes with, and really just focusing on basically like that time period. Obviously, the Black Plague is around, dealing with loss, with grief, and also dealing with being an unusual woman, an uncommon woman, in an era where that is not necessarily appreciated.
Yep. Good summary. Also, movie incoming. So that's one of the reasons why we're doing this book.
And Paul Mescal is playing William Shakespeare. So... Perfect
Even
casting.
It might ultimately give me the ick for Paul Mescal.
I know, but I love him.
Oh, it looks like he does a really good job. Okay, anyway, first things first, our reviews. Do you guys have reviews from the internet?
Yes. Sorry, I have to find. It's somewhere. Okay. 4 stars. Agnes is very cool.
That's it.
Yeah. Sorry, that's what I had to find. That's all. Was.
I love that.
I mean, period.
Yeah.
Short and sweet. I have a 1-star review that I wholeheartedly disagree with, but I will read it anyway. Grown, another novel with the stereotypical, magical, beautiful, but rebellious, misunderstood witch slash medicine woman, complete with the obligatory evil stepmother. Really, the most interesting character in this novel is a flea. The Kestrel is a close second.
Oh my god, we picked the same review.
No!
Hold on, I got a backup, which I did not like as much, but I do have 2.
But I wholeheartedly disagree. Also, I'm fine with that stereotype. Love
it's
witchy
not time
women.
Not for your review yet.
I know.
Keep it to yourself.
I was honestly gonna say that, like during our discussion, I was like, I just never get tired of reading about witchy women. Like witchy women are.
We really have hit it hard this year on accident.
Yeah,
hey.
It was our like incidental theme.
I love being a witch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my review is. 1 star. This book and I are enemies, foes, nemeses. I did not DNF it on principle to know if my loathing was justified till the end. Final conclusion, it was.
Fair.
Yeah. All right. So, what about you guys? Oh, wait, hold on. This book is very popular. It's short. The overall Goodreads review is 4.19 out of 5. The Fable is 4.15 out of 5. And the Storygraph review is 4.19 out of 5. What did y'all think?
Do you want me to go first or last?
You go first because I already know you're the lowest.
Okay, nothing to write home about. It was 3 stars. I fell asleep reading it at one point. I dislike books that have little to no dialogue. This was one of those. Shakespeare sucks.
We can agree on that.
There's some really pretty prose, so I'll give her that. It was like, I'm not saying it's a bad book, but I'm not saying it's like top of my list this year. It's very in the middle.
3.
All right.
I know.
I was
should have known when we picked this. I was more hyped because of the movie, and then I realized, no, this is not a Caitlin book.
No, it is not.
No. It's definitely a Casey Catherine book, though. It's been a while since me and you have teamed up, so
yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, I gave this 4.5 stars. I really, really did love it. It wrenched my heart out. Like, I cried multiple times. It just was so emotionally devastating. I loved getting to see the story of a very famous, lauded man from the perspective of his wife. I think it's very similar to, like, the Greek retellings we all like, where, like, refocusing the story on a woman, someone who was there.
Circe was one of her recommended readings at the end of this book.
Yep.
And that totally tracks.
Perfect sense. Especially, we can get into this later, but I just think, like, the reason great men are great has often been because of their wives and because of the sacrifices their wives made. So I loved that sort of theme and reading about her experience. Fuck Shakespeare, as Caitlin says. I loved
Agnes. I didn't put it that way, but.
Well, that's how I'll put it. And so, yeah, I thought it was beautifully written. It was the right length. It was really emotionally deep. And I loved Agnes. So it's not a perfect 5 for me because there were a few portions that were a little bit overwritten where I was like, OK, get to the point, queen. But in general, really well written book.
Yeah, I'm the highest. I gave it 5 stars because it was perfect for me. I love historical fiction, so it already had me hooked on that aspect of it. But I loved Agnes. And I love, love, love retellings of history from the perspective of women, because history is not told ever from the perspective of women, because it's history, not herstory. And so the idea that Agnes has been so ignored in history, even though, like, it's even debated what her name was. Like, it could have been Anne, could have been Agnes. Like, she's just known as Shakespeare's wife. And he's known as this greatest playwright in all of history and gets so many accolades and so much written about him. But nothing is written about her. And bringing this out from the perspective of their son and why certain plays were written because of it. Like, it's a very interesting, like, narrative, like, essay prompt where it's just like she took a prompt and ran with it and said, no, I think that this is significant why he named one of his plays after his son. Mm-hmm. It was beautifully written. I listened to it on audiobook, and the person who was reading on Audible was amazing. So I just, like, couldn't put it down. Like, it took me no days to, like, listen to it. It was amazing.
Oh,
also fuck Shakespeare.
Yes, fuck Shakespeare, but also I just heard your cat screaming.
Oh, yes.
Hey, wasn't mine for once.
Yes, my cats are in the back fighting each other. I didn't know y'all could hear that.
You heard a scream and a hiss.
Yep, they're fighting.
He just finally gave up and she's just staring at me. Okay. Anyway, is the story more plot or character driven?
That's
unfortunately
hard.
Plot.
Yeah.
Even though there's, like, no action. It's because, okay, here's why. Because it tells you at the beginning Hamnet's going to die. So you're just waiting to see when he dies and what's going to happen.
Yeah. The story is about, obviously, him dying, but also how that impacts the family. So, I don't know. I would say that is technically the plot. I think it's still a very character-driven book. Because the whole thing you read is the characters' emotions and their reactions and sort of how the family is impacted by what happens.
I feel like that's hard, though, because of it being an omniscient third-party narrator. I just didn't feel as connected to the characters.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
Like, I feel like if it had been all in on Hamnet's POV and Agnes's POV, I would have liked it better.
I can see that. But yeah.
I understand why it didn't, but.
Right. I really liked the third person, and I think it really worked because there was not, like, Agnes is the main character, but there's also not really a main character. Mm-hmm. And I think if they had written it in first person, they could, she couldn't have done as many vignettes on all the other characters. It just would have been too jarring. So I think it worked for what the book was. And I'm actually impressed. I cried so many times because it is really hard to write third person well.
Yeah, I think she hit it out of the park with the third person. I mean, also, like, I agree with you, Caitlin, like, when you write in first person, you get a lot closer to the characters. But I also cried a lot, but I am the crier of this group. I cried at work while listening to it. That was an interesting experience. I don't recommend.
How many times did I cry, guys?
Zero. You have a black heart.
Well, yeah. Mom's cat died, so we're good. Right. I was worried there for a second.
Yeah. But yeah, I agree. I think it's character driven. There is a plot point, which is the Black Plague, but I do think that the characters are what propels the story forward.
Yeah. Have you or would you read other books by the author?
Yes, I have not, but I would.
Caitlin says whatever. I actually have read a book by Maggie O'Farrell, and I read her memoir, which I've mentioned in a few episodes before, but it's actually one of the best memoirs I've ever written because she did it in a really interesting way. She kind of tells her life story through 17 different brushes with death that she's had in her life. And so, yeah, she kind of goes through her life, but through the perspective of these, like, very specific instances where she kind of, like, narrowly avoided, like, a really bad outcome that could have killed her. And there's some really interesting ones. Like, she basically escapes a serial killer. Like, and so, yeah, there's some really intense ones. Anyway, so I was curious to read other books by her because I did really like the memoir.
I have heard people talk about The Marriage Portrait.
The Marriage Portrait was very popular and got a lot of hype as well. She has a bunch of books, but I think those two are definitely her most popular. And I would read it now.
Yeah. I mean, seems like she does historical fiction very well.
I have other stuff higher on my list. Nothing against it. Maybe I would, but.
This is, the genre is not it.
I really liked her writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just, like, personal preference, like, the third person omniscient did not engage me as much as I feel like it did others. And that's a personal reading experience.
Totally. You're also not a huge historical fiction fan.
It has to be good. it has to be more action-y. Like, this just, like, I knew what was going to happen, and it wasn't super action-y. And there was, like, no dialogue, which, I cannot. Like, one of my all-time favorite books is a historical fiction, and it's super depressing, and I love it. And it's The Island of Sea Women. So, like, I don't dislike historical fiction. I just need more going on.
It's fair.
Maybe this was just overhyped to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I personally love a nothing burger and I love a no dialogue book.
Oh, we know.
It was right up my alley.
I'm more picky about that kind of stuff, but historical fiction always does get to me because I love the history behind it and I love learning more about that history from a different perspective.
And the witchy women.
Witchy women. I can go any day reading a book about witchy women. Like, that stereotype. Give me more.
Okay. Well, what about the pacing? How long did it take you to read? I think the book is like a little over 300 pages.
Yeah. A little under 400, I think.
I can tell you I read it in 3 sittings, and I can tell you that because I forced myself to do that. And so I read 30% at once, 20% at once, and then the other 50%, which is okay because honestly, part 2 was faster in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But I literally had to be like, nope, you're reading this much today. And I did fall asleep. So
there you go.
Not that it wasn't well paced. It's just like, there's no dialogue. So I fell asleep.
I liked the pacing. I think it took me 2 days to read. I do think it's definitely not for everyone. It's like Caitlin has said, it's not action packed. But I really like everything just flowed together really well. And I found something interesting in each of the characters and each of the scenes. And so I just wasn't really bored at any point. So I just kept reading and kept reading and kept reading.
Yeah. Like I said, I breezed through it listening. I think according to my Goodreads, it only took 2 days. So during my work hours, I would just literally put on my headphones. And when I was like doing things, like I just got into a groove listening to this book, taking me to another world outside of an office in Central Texas.
That's and when that world's better.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't say it. You did. yeah. So I think it was very well paced. I was always interested about what the next chapter would bring because there's like some time jumps and stuff. And so I was always looking forward to a specific time period because I am a sucker for romance. But it, all of it was interesting. So loved it. Loved the pacing.
Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book? Again, very pertinent question because the movie is out or shortly coming out.
I think it's out. Yeah.
And it's nominated already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100,000% yes, I will be watching this movie because I love Paul Mescal.
Yeah. So, I also... Oh.
No, you go.
I'll go first, Caitlin. I love Paul Mescal. Also, the woman who plays Agnes is the woman from the movie I'm Thinking of Ending Things, which if you guys listen to that episode, you guys know I loved both that book and movie. So I really want to see it just because I really like the actors in it.
And a female director.
And a female director. I wanted to read this book sooner than we had originally scheduled, specifically so I could read the book before I saw the movie.
Period.
I wanted to read the book to watch the movie just because we love a book adaptation that's getting hype.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not sure I'll watch the movie.
No! Okay.
We'll say in a way it made me reluctant to watch the movie just because it makes me hate Shakespeare so much.
Yeah.
Am I ready to like hate Paul Mescal that much? Like, I don't know.
I'm hoping he brings some redemption to the character.
I'm not going to be having it.
I know. But I've seen some clips.
Like anyway, we all know Shakespeare was a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some clips like as if they're not having the ending that the book ends with. Like they continue it a little bit after.
I actually liked the ending.
Yeah. We can get into that in the spoiler section. But that's kind of what I've seen from a trailer.
Yeah. I mean, because so much of it has no dialogue and is just kind of like narrated, I could see how you would need to tidy up that ending because you're not getting the feelings and the inner thoughts of the character that you get in the book. So I could see how you might need to expand on it.
Right.
However, I like the ending.
Yeah. Ooh. They just may not want to end on such a negative note either.
I thought
not it was negative.
Sort of it positive note.
But yeah, it was like left the door open for them.
Bittersweet.
Well, yeah, actually, I shouldn't say anything because we're in the non-spoiler section. Okay, well, that brings us to our busy girl rating.
Oh, I want to give it a 5 so bad, but I recognize that not everyone would enjoy this book. So I'm going to knock it down to a 4. And that's the lowest I can possibly go for this book. Because I do think it's like interesting history. And I do think like it brings a unique perspective to a character that we have read a lot of his works. Like it's required reading for pretty much every public school system in America and beyond. So just giving an interesting, unique perspective to Shakespeare's life and works. So I do kind of hope that this gets into the zeitgeist and like people actually start like consuming this kind of like thought experiment. But I'll give it a 4 because it's historical fiction. It's not for everyone. The prose is very like old English, like very flowery, not a lot of dialogue. And I understand there are Caitlins out there in the world.
I'm a very literate person and I definitely understood everything. I just like wasn't.
Yes. Bewitched. Oh, yes. You're a very literate person.
No, I'll give it a 3 still. Like, I know there are people the opposite. Like, I know there are people out there who love this book and would love this book. And people I would probably recommend it to. And then there's people I wouldn't recommend it to. Meanwhile, there's books where, like, someone just texted me and said, hey, I need a new fantasy book to read. And I was like, all caps, Dungeon Crawler Carl. So it's not bad, you know? By the way, the response was, is it girly?
No. There's so many dick jokes in that book.
Yeah. But, like, it was paced fine. It just, like, for me, wasn't a home run.
Totally fair. I'm also going to give it a 4. I think it's definitely worth a shot. It's short enough that I don't think you'll feel like you wasted your time. And it is a very well-written, very high-quality read. So I think even if you don't like it, the time sacrifice just isn't that great. So, and you probably will really like it because it's pretty good. So, but of course, it is not for everyone.
I also think there are people out there who did not read Shakespeare in school and have not picked it up on their own and would not give a rip about this story.
I can't believe that because I feel like every person I've encountered has at least read Romeo and Juliet because of school.
I think if you're a reader, if you like to read, you have some passing interest in Shakespeare. Just knowledge.
We run in, most people are reading this kind of stuff. There are other circles.
No, I understand there are other circles, but I feel like it's almost required reading is Shakespeare in public school.
I actually have a friend at work who she asked me and one of our other coworkers if we could do like a Shakespeare club class because she's never read any.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
I feel like I've read like most of his plays at this point.
Okay, that's a fun question before we start. Which plays has everyone read from Shakespeare?
Oh, yeah. I actually have read Hamlet.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet. He has one about Caesar, right?
Yeah, Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar I read as well. And then I actually also read Othello. So quite a few.
Yeah. I think I've read Romeo and Juliet, Midsummer Night's Dream, As You Like It, King John. I actually saw that in the Globe Theater, so I didn't read it, but I feel like that's similar enough.
Yeah, that counts.
That counts. Oh, God, why am I forgetting the other ones? I've read a lot of them, honestly.
Oh, Hamlet. I also saw the Scottish King one performed. King Richard. I saw that one performed, but it was a high school performance, so I kind of don't want to count it.
What high school would do that?
In love. It was rough. Like, okay. I'm going to be honest, it was pretty
rough. I was in the Midsummer Night's Dream as a play, so.
That's weirdly one I haven't read. I first did Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
The next one that I had to do for class was Richard.
King Richard.
Yeah, I've done Hamlet. I had to memorize a soliloquy from it at one point. Couldn't tell you anymore. I've done Antony and Cleopatra. I've done Macbeth. I feel like there's another.
I'm gonna guess
some of the more like manly ones, and then like the two really romantic ones.
I'm guessing the soliloquy you read for Hamlet started with "to be or not to be."
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably one of his most famous.
Maybe the other one was from Macbeth.
I've never read Macbeth, but I've heard good things about it.
Macbeth is the origin of like double, toil and trouble. And
yeah.
Wicked, I did this know way that. Something wicked this way comes. It's strange, though.
I heard that, too.
That is a weird one. Okay. That brings us to our spoiler section. So we are now going to get into the book, everything that happens. Our likes, our dislikes, maybe we'll fight. You'll have to listen and know. So read the book, come back, and then hear us discuss.
I froze my booty off at a Chiefs game. I'm not going to have the energy to fight y'all. So also, it's one of those where I'm not trying to fight. I'm just like,
I'm creating a teaser.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm going to fight you guys.
Okay, anyway, our first question up is, what did you think about the story going back and forth in time and about Shakespeare not being mentioned by name?
I loved going back and forth in time. At first, I didn't understand it because it doesn't really say they're going back and forth in time, but you realize it because you get Will's perspective for some reason at the beginning when he's like first meeting Agnes. And you realize like, oh, the Glover's son, that's William Shakespeare. Oh, we were just talking about his son Hamnet, but now he's talking about meeting his wife for the first time. And that's when you kind of figure it out, which I thought was kind of interesting. And normally I wouldn't like that without being told, but it almost felt cool to like get that perspective. I also thought it was incredibly well done to not name him. He's always the Glover's son, the
Agnes's husband, Judith's father.
Yeah, like it's always him not being named, because I feel like it's a complete 180 to say like she's always Shakespeare's wife. Why don't we treat him the same way she has been treated in history and make him the one who's not named? And I think that that's just such a feminist power move that Maggie O'Farrell has done.
Yeah, I really liked it too. It's because it was just like, it's not his story, you know, so we're not going to make him the focus. The back and forth in time thing, I actually probably could have done without. I think it was one of the things I didn't like as much about the story. I really, really liked the amount of time the book spanned. Like, I like that we get their kind of courtship and how their relationship came to be. I like that we kind of learn about both of their childhoods and we get kind of the early days of their children's lives. But I honestly don't think it would have taken anything away from the book to have told it chronologically.
I agree. Mostly because when you get to part two, it stops doing that.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah,
it would have been okay.
Right.
And that's probably why I feel like part two was faster, is because then we were just moving forward from there on.
Right. And my preference is just always for chronological, I think.
Same.
Okay. So what did you think of Agnes, the heroine? She's got a kind of dysfunctional family. She's like an unwanted stepchild of a witchy woman from a first marriage, and then has to live with her stepmom. And then what about her ploy to marry the Glover's son?
I mean, it's smart because you have to, when there's a child brought into the situation and brought into the equation, it kind of forces the hand of the parents because you don't want that child born out of wedlock. So she's smart enough to know that that will force the issue. I found it interesting that she's older than him. I didn't realize that.
Agnes is a cougar.
Yeah, she's older than him and he's 18. So he still needs parent permission in order to marry.
Which, pause. Crazy that there's people getting married younger than that now, and back in the day it was considered too young to be 18.
Well, I think it's only for men. That's not too young
of
for
course.
Women.
Yeah, of course. But
women, you're spinster at like 26.
Yeah. So she was, I think, a spinster at that point, but I don't know her age.
Never says.
Yeah. But everyone was kind of like, she's probably never going to get married because she's witchy and crazy.
I loved the foresty bird girl.
I love it.
She's awesome. When she snuck off to have her baby in the trees, I was like, slay. And I like how everything she did was very purposeful and subtle, but had big, you know, ripple effects. Like when she first moved into the house, all the changes she started making and stuff. I just hate that then she kind of got stuck. Like her and her husband both got sort of, they thought they were finding a way out, and then they sort of both got trapped anyway. It was still better, though, because they were together, which was cute, whatever. But then they weren't together anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought Agnes was great. I thought she kind of, once Hamnet died, didn't care about her other children, which was a bummer.
Yeah.
So then I didn't like her as much. But grief is crazy, and that's what the book's about.
Yeah, I do think I really liked that. I think one of the most salient messages that I got from the book, which I think is true, is that Agnes really sacrificed her life so William Shakespeare could become William Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was living his dream and she wasn't really living hers. And that, at least in the duration of the story, went very unrecognized by him. Like, she, I don't think she really, you know, I think she wanted to be a mother and, like, didn't care about doing that. But, you know, she had to move into the city and live with his parents and was taking care of the kids and was kind of doing all of this stuff that just wasn't appreciated by him.
Right. She uses him to save her, but then he doesn't realize when she saves him.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she, because in the book, obviously, she is the reason that he ultimately goes to London. And then she actually continues to support him being in London, even though it's really hard on their family. And then he ends up betraying her, even though she has been, like, gracious enough to, like, allow him to chase his dreams.
Maybe.
He is.
You mean maybe?
At the end, she goes into his apartment and can tell no one's ever been there besides him.
I think he goes to the women's apartments.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it kind of left it in a gray area. It left a lot of things in a gray area.
He's been cheating on her with tons of women. And he...
I mean, that's recorded in history. He has a lot of mistresses.
And she knew the whole time, and he knew, and he kept doing it, even though he knew that she could tell.
Yeah.
So, he didn't even really appreciate the fact that she supported his dream, even if it took him away from her, and then didn't really ask for a lot of her own dreams in return. Because that's kind of what the end of the book meant to me, is she just didn't really get to have her own life. Like, I think in her dream, they would have been a family, and she just sacrificed it for him.
Well, because she knew he was so, like, depressed being in his hometown, which I think is understandable when you have an abusive father. And being in that cloud and in that orbit of your father and being forced to take up all of your father's work and his, like, person, like, he had to take on a lot because of that. And so she knew he would die slowly if he had stayed as the Glover's son. And so she kind of makes this ploy to London, but then, like, obviously her daughter can't go anywhere because she's very, like, small and sick. So, like, London's not, she'll die in London, so she kind of has to stay behind. And I also think she was kind of disgusted by London. Like, she got there and she was just like, what the fuck is this place? This place is rank. Yeah.
She's a country girl.
Yeah.
She likes the beauty of nature.
I think if she could have her kids out in the countryside, living off the land and, like, just being, like, witchy people, she would love that.
Speaking of, really the best character is Bartholomew.
I love Bartholomew.
Yes. Oh, my God. I loved Bartholomew. I think that was also something the book did really well, is there were the right number of villains and the right number of heroes. And none of the villains were too villainous, right? Like, they were all awful. There were some awful characters, but you also came to understand them in the same way that you understood the others. And so you didn't hate them necessarily, even if you didn't like them.
No, they were very, like Joan felt very much like a Jane Austen villain. Like,
yes.
A petty, petty, bitchy lady, you know?
Yeah.
No, I loved Bartholomew and Agnes's relationship most, because they always knew unspoken what each other needed. And I think when she went with Bartholomew to London and was disgusted how, like, solid he was at her side and supportive, like, to me, he was the best character in the whole book. And just, like, he was a simple country boy who everyone kind of thought was kind of big and dumb, but he was way smarter than people realize and was so dutiful to his family, both the stepmom and siblings he didn't want there anymore and his sister who had left.
Right.
Good and made boy. Sure she was set up and outside of that abusive household because he could see it.
He saw it the moment they arranged it.
Yeah. And I did appreciate how crafty Agnes was. Just always doing what she could to have, like, independence and to bring value into the world. Just not letting everyone dictate what she needed to do and be all the time. Including when she fell apart. Like, she was like, I'm not getting dressed today, so fuck off. And I was like, you know, she's not, Caitlin, like you point out, she's not always lovable during that period because her struggles have meant that she's not as good of a mother as she should have been. But you also
I think
feel
what
for her.
Irked me about that is it allowed Susanna's role model to become Mary, who was way
yes.
less agreeable.
Mm-hmm. Which was a bad role model. Yeah. But also her husband literally abandoned her to her grief. So I kind yeah. of got it.
And like you hear it kind of from her perspective, even though it's third person, where she's just kind of like, time keeps moving forward and he's not here. And that time is always continuing. And that's more and more time away from my son. And that's like when you at that point want to stop the flow of time. And also she feels responsible for it because she had predicted that she would have two children and she had three. So she was always just looking for the other shoe to drop and thought it would be Judith. And that's hard when you like have this kind of like you have this power essentially to predict the future and you predicted it wrong and it shows you how volatile the future is and time is and death and like you can't predict that kind of thing. But the fact that she has this burden of that power and that gift and she got it wrong and she's like, well, if I'd done this instead of this, maybe he would still be alive. And that's really heartbreaking, but it also like it's understandable. It's also not okay to abandon your children in their time of need. But I think it was important for her to break in order to regrow back into a more functioning human. And also it allowed her daughters to grow up and become stronger.
I think the author must have lost someone very close to her to be able to write Agnes's feelings the way she did during this time. Mm-hmm. Especially like when they're even like walking to the church and it's talking about everyone, you know, parts for us, but then they close behind us again and there's nothing showing like the path we're taking to bury our son and no one else yeah. will think of it anymore. Like, and you're talking about like the passage of time without him, like mm-hmm. she wrote all of that very well. So you understood why Agnes was despondent and it was just unfortunate because you also saw her daughter's POV.
Right. Which I like too, because it still is holding Agnes accountable. Mm-hmm. Like, you
and
know,
they're grieving in their own ways too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they've all been abandoned by their fathers. So. Yeah. But I also can fill in some detail, actually, Caitlin, on that point, because I read Maggie O'Farrell's memoir. One of her children has a very serious, very rare autoimmune condition that has led them to be near death multiple times. And Maggie O'Farrell includes her child's illness as one of her own near-death experiences, because she says in the book that having your child be so ill feels like you're dying. So that's definitely part of where that came from.
That makes sense.
And I guess that's why she could see in Shakespeare's Hamlet that that's not a coincidence that he named it after his son, even though his son's name is Hamnet. Very close, though.
Apparently, and back in the day, those were interchangeable.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. And so the idea that Shakespeare would choose a very Hamlet is a very interesting character, a male character in plays, because he's suicidal, but he also goes crazy. But he also is very righteous and very like he's playing politics. He's a prince. Like, it's very interesting to see how he wrote his own son into the future, even though his son would never get to live that future, but also talking about suicide and talking about depression. So, yeah.
Once again, everyone's grieving their own ways. They just like don't communicate. So nobody knows.
But the fact that no one had ever connected that besides Maggie O'Farrell.
Yeah. I do really like, I almost made me want to reread Hamlet mm-hmm. with the knowledge of the sort of backdrop of what was going on in Shakespeare's life. And how his own son might have inspired the story. Anyway, what did you think about Hamnet, the golden boy himself, and his twin sister, who is the one who technically should have been, quote unquote, should have been lost, but is the one who survived?
He's a pure soul. The whole book is him just trying to help his sister.
Yeah. The first half of the book stressed me the hell out because this child is just running around everywhere looking for an adult. And I was like losing my mind. Like, oh, my God.
Right. And the only adult he finds beats him.
Yeah.
Hits him. Yeah. Horrible.
And then, like, the second adult he finds basically treats him like a leper because they're like, oh, your sister has the Black Plague? No, we're not helping you.
Yeah, I don't know. It was sad. And then once he got her help, people were so focused on helping her, he was forgotten anyway. So, like, he almost brought about his own doom.
Yeah.
But I also like the idea of leaving it up to, like, he had control of his own fate and that he may or may not have, like, given his life force to his sister and his twin sister. And the idea that they were, like, the same person in two different people, like, one was left-handed, one was right-handed. Like, the idea that they were just separated at birth and that they were one soul in two different people. So I liked that kind of idea. Judith
came into the world not breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also do think Hamnet's death is constructed for, like, the absolute maximum painful irony. Like, we were talking about Agnes's power, and, like, I agree. I think it's really hard to read, partly because, and so hard for her, partly because she's so used to being able to predict things and see everything that it's, like, just gives her this lack of control and this feeling of the world coming out from under her, because she thought that she could and she had been able to. And so the surprise and her son's death being out of her control felt so uniquely terrible, even though it would be terrible for anyone. And then it's also, like, Hamlet sort of, like you say, almost brings about his own doom by, you know, trying so hard to get everyone around and prioritizing his sister. And everyone would have wanted to save him, but then they were so worried about Judith. It's just like a series of unfortunate events that were unavoidable, but you can also see how, like, it went wrong. And so it's like, if one thing had been different, who knows, but it wasn't. And so it's so painful.
I loved the chapter that we got of the background of the fleas getting to England and, like, how the Black Plague moved. I really liked it. I enjoyed it a lot because I was, like, very intrigued by the idea of it moving from the, like, Mideast or, like, the Mediterranean and getting up. I
understand why Boy was getting beaten about a monkey. And
I know.
Suddenly Judith has the plague. I get it. Some people don't realize how the plague traveled. But
the idea also, of coincidence.
Oh, actually, a lot of cats did die. And that was why I didn't like that chapter.
A lot of cats did die, unfortunately, yes.
I will say that was probably the one chapter in the book I probably could have done without.
I hope it's half the movie.
I doubt it even makes it.
Yeah, I'm sure
that tells you what you need to know.
Yeah, I highly doubt it. But anyway.
Opening credits, didn't you know?
It could be opening credits. I could kind of believe that. Anyway. Well,
the idea of, like, things have to fall into place in order for this to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except then it's talking about, like, that seemed impactful. And then it's talking about the playhouses shut down every year for plague season. I'm like, well, she could have got it from anywhere.
I guess.
But now we know how she got it.
Beads.
Okay, so a big part of the book and a big part of the ending is after Hamnet dies, Shakespeare essentially grieves by becoming an absentee father, which is crazy because he was already kind of an absentee father, and he becomes, like, just disappears on his family, doesn't go back for almost a year. Writes a play.
He's sort of processing via art and is afraid to be around the place where his son died.
Right. Which means that his family carries on completely without him.
Don't worry, he buys them a house.
What'd you say?
I said, don't worry, he buys them a house.
He does.
That makes up for all of it.
Yeah. And makes up for not even sending a letter for months on end. And you do have mixed feelings because you understand that it's his grieving process and he's in pain, but you also see that he is deeply abandoned and betrayed his family in doing
that. When the infidelity begins.
And that's when he starts cheating on his wife.
Implied.
Implied. It's happening.
It's extremely explicit in the book, I feel like.
I don't know. I was just saying, I was very surprised when it talked about how no one else had ever been in his room.
Yeah, because that's his writing space. And he talks about the sanctity of that.
Yeah. Anyway, it's pretty explicit in the book that he's sleeping with a lot of other people. And anyway, yeah, the betrayal really sucks. It like really hurts. Like, and watching his family carry on without him and be in so much pain and like miss him so much while he is on his own journey and sort of just like, it fills me with resentment because I feel like this is such a male privilege to just decide to take a total vacation from your family. Like,
well, like turning it as in like, well, I'm providing for my family. Like, you are, but you are not.
Right. Like, that's not how they feel. Yeah. Like,
there's also different ways of providing. You can provide money, but you could also provide emotional support.
And also,
I'm passionate about my work, so.
Well, and then he talks, like, because we get his perspective where he's like, I feel suffocated already with my wife's grief. I feel suffocated by this house already. I have to get out. And it's like, okay, but you can understand.
And without me, our business will go under, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's very self-important, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's being selfish. Like, he's just rationalizing his decision. And I can have empathy for it because I understand why, but it's also a uniquely male privilege. Like, a woman would never or would rarely suffer a loss and then leave and be like, this is suffocating to me, so I'm just not going to take care of my children.
Well, and then it's implied that he wrote a comedy right after instead of a tragedy. Yeah. And it took him a while until he wrote Hamlet. We do get his perspective like intermittently while he's like having his little London sojourn, and he's obviously still grieving, but he's like finding ways to focus on other things to like mask his grief. Cause he's like, well, the show must go on. And it's just like, you can sit with your grief for a second, buddy. Like, you can actually like write to your wife, talk to your kids. They're sitting in it too.
Dressing up as the theoretical ghost of your future son is a healthy way to cope.
No,
not really. Also making everything about, oh, I'm so suffocated by other people's grief and then coping by sleeping with other women. It's just like,
it's inexcusable.
Yeah.
I know that this is a different time period and that like infidelity from men was kind of just expected. Still not okay.
Okay, but like,
but also in the book,
he's from a small town where that's not expected, and he goes to a city and his wife just has to deal with it because she sent him to that city.
Right. Which is, again, just the most painful irony, because her sending him away and allowing him to be away is what has allowed him to cheat on her. And it was so unforgivable to me, I think, just because we also read how acutely it hurt Agnes and how much she still loved him, even though it hurt her so much. And it was like the death of her son hurt her so much. Her husband's infidelity hurt her so much. And so she really just kind of sacrificed so much just for this man.
And the fact that he wouldn't talk to her about it, like, she was blatantly saying and calling him out on it, that's why I'm angry. But like, he was just like changing subject to think about like grief and like Hamnet. And it's like, dude, she's calling you out on your bullshit. She knows
because he even talks about when he buys the house, like, it's so nice to surprise you because no one knows what it's like living with a woman like you. So like, he knows that she knows. So it'd be easy to bring it up and talk about it.
Yeah.
But he won't do it.
No.
Dirty dog. It makes me just, oh, I just hate him so much.
And this is why we never said his name, not just because it was not his story, but also because it's like Voldemort.
It's a little bit of Voldemort, but I think it's also a little bit like he's not important to the story in the sense of he is.
I was joking. Thank you for bringing it back.
You're right, though. You're right, though. I mean, like, he has made himself unimportant to his own family story because he's an absentee father.
It was interesting because at the beginning, I was like, wow, interesting that they're not using his name. And at the end, I was like, yeah, don't speak that man's name.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
It's very much so like you told all these amazing stories. You've made an amazing life out of yourself, but you were so absent from your own family story that your name is so unimportant.
Yeah. And then at the end, it kind of leaves the door open for them to reconcile. It's essentially like Agnes seeing the play helps her forgive him for the way he's grieved. And it seems like maybe they can kind of come back to each other. I think she says something or at the end where she's like, maybe my, like, this will help break, like, the distance between us. Like, the grief has driven us apart, and this can be our path back to each other.
And that's why I like the ending, because mm-hmm. it was open. It could go either way. And, like, she saw him when she was having a hard time seeing him. However, she doesn't know what you know, that he's, like, yeah, as soon as this show's over, I'm going back to write that letter I've been trying to write to my family. Which, like, she saw that he'd been trying to write it. So Bud's like, okay, dude, like, how hard is it to tell your family what you're doing? Like, you didn't even have to tell her about the play yet. You could have just spoken to her. Yeah. Just be like, hey, how's it going? Here's what I'm up to.
And also, like, I'm sure he's thought that so many times. I'm sure every day for the past 6 months he's been like, no, today's the day I'm gonna talk to Agnes, today's the day I'm gonna write Agnes,
right? And like, talk to her, don't tell her about the play yet, I guess, when you're ready, but like, you can't just ghost your wife,
right? Like, he literally, they went months on end not hearing from him.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And she has to hear it from her evil stepmother that yeah, there's a play named after her son. Yeah
that's why when Bartholomew was like, yeah, we're leaving tomorrow, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he saw her in the crowd. I think that was kind of implied that she was very close to the front of the stage and he looked directly at her as he was giving his like monologue to their son. I do think I don't forgive him for it, obviously, but it's an interesting like perspective on like grief, because this is his way of giving homage to his son and showing grief. And she actually was like, oh, he actually is grieving. He's not just forgetting us and being absent. Like, he actually is putting thought into this and putting, like, we now have a common language almost. Like, they didn't have a common language because she didn't understand that he was grieving. Like, she was like, it doesn't even look like you're grieving. You're just running away. But now she sees that how he has grieved and sees how he has put their son in one of his most prolific productions.
Well, and even more specifically, like, her husband would have taken the time to teach the actor boy to be the perfect little Hamlet, mm-hmm. because she's like, I see my son in this actor. So he took the time
to get the mannerisms.
So even though he wasn't around a lot, he knew. He paid attention. He knew his son. So he is still grieving, but is it enough?
I don't know.
Not for me.
Not for me, like, but.
Fuck that guy. Honestly, I hated him. But I'm still glad that the ending left the door open for something better.
It made it still end as a romance.
Yes.
Yeah. It was sort of like opening the door for them to fall in love with each other again.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, this is where I'll say what I've seen from the trailer. There's a one scene in the trailer where he's like, face paint is like washed off on the sides. Like, he's got it behind his ears and stuff. And it looks like they're in the backstage of a theater. And I don't remember anywhere in the book where she goes to any of his plays. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking that that's one of the ending scenes, is her talking to him after Hamlet. So that's why I'm thinking that they're going to continue on from that ending. I did see like other like shots where like all the crowds reaching up towards Hamlet, like reaching towards the stage, which was very cute and very like theatrical. But yeah, I don't know where it's going to go with that. But I mean, hopefully they don't give like a full like redemption arc to Shakespeare. But I mean, Paul Mescal is hot as fuck. So
maybe he'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
It's the hoop earrings, isn't it?
It's the earrings. Yeah, they're sexy.
Okay, well, I think that's it. Do you guys have book recommendations?
I'll recommend a plague book, Year of Wonders.
It's a good one.
I mean, it's got plague in it. It's around this time period in England. and I think it's a very interesting retelling of the plague from a woman's perspective. So, slay.
I'm going to recommend one we've already mentioned on the podcast, Circe, because retelling from a woman's perspective, there's the appearance of some very famous men in Greek mythology, but the book is about her and her story, and it's also a very powerful literary type read.
Along that line, I think I want to recommend Medusa's Sisters. Just because.
Another good one.
That one was still hard to digest from the woman's point of view, as was this one. And doesn't necessarily end how you want it to. It's very bittersweet.
Yeah. Okay, well, these are just our opinions. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can send us messages and book recommendations at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. We have a website, busygirlspod.com, where you can check out some of our other book references or book recommendations, sorry. And please rate and review our podcast.
Yeah, so thank you for joining us. We're getting close to wrapping up 2025, so we hope we'll see you next time. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening, and when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.